Liebe Zuschauer, liebe Zuschauer,
dear viewers, dear listeners, welcome to the program The Hidden Love of Jesus for the Animals. This topic brings up two questions. The first is, did Jesus love animals? So can we talk about the love of Jesus for the animals? Anyone who affirms this is perhaps interested to hear whether there are any indications of this. And anyone who believes in the love of Jesus for the animals has to wonder about the second question. Who made a secret of Jesus' love for the animals? We want to probe for the answers to these questions today. But first, who are we? We are not theologians. We don't believe that Jesus can be studied. We are people who see animals as creatures of God and treat them accordingly. As followers of Jesus of Nazareth, we want to shed light on the truth about his life and his teachings. Today, particularly in reference to his relationship to the animals, our fellow creatures. Before we get into the love of Jesus for the animals, we want to first briefly point out what devastating consequences it had and has until today that, as a rule, animals are denied any right to life or personality. They are simply evaluated according to their use to human beings. Most animals are used as suppliers of meat, or better said, they are abused and brutally slaughtered. Can you imagine that twice as many slaughter animals live on Earth as human beings? A large part of these poor creatures lead an atrocious existence in factory farming. Worldwide, over 50 billion land animals are killed for human consumption every year. Fish and other inhabitants of the oceans are in addition to this.
Year after year, millions of animals are abused and killed in animal experiments.
Fox, cats, mink, and other so-called fur-bearing animals are tortured so that later, in the truest sense of the words, their pelt is pulled off over their ears because people want to wear fur.
It's not any better for the animals living in the wild. They are harassed, hunted, and shot down. The oceans are fished empty, and man claims all living space for himself. Thus, the living space for animals is pushed back more and more, and many animal species die out.
Man has made other animal species serve his enjoyment at leisure time. Some are put on show in the circus or a petting zoo, while others are kept as so-called domestic animals. Many of these animals are not kept in a way that is appropriate to their species. They are degraded to lapdogs or cuddly cats or as fascinating reptiles in terrariums, as birds in cages or fish in aquariums. Until the next vacation, and then many animals are simply abandoned. This and much more are the cruel consequences of keeping the love of Jesus for the animals hidden.
Earlier, when I heard the words animals and Jesus, I thought of a picture from my childhood which hung in my grandparents' house. There, I could see Jesus as the Good Shepherd, standing in the midst of a flock of sheep with a little lamb in his arms. I loved this picture. And for me as a child, it was totally clear that Jesus was a friend of the animals who protected them. As a teenager, I remembered this picture again and thought, if Jesus loved the animals and protected them, as he is always depicted in pictures, then he certainly never killed them. Or did any of you, dear fellow people watching your televisions, ever see a picture that depicts Jesus with a knife in hand, poised to slit the throat of a lamb or some other animal? Hardly. Back then I continued thinking, for me, Jesus was an honest and just man who would not demand anything of his fellow men that he himself was not willing to do. So Jesus would have never charged a person to slaughter an animal so that he could eat it. With this, I proved to myself as a young person that Jesus did not eat animals and was thus a vegetarian. Totally logical, isn't it? However, I cannot now say that following this I stopped eating meat, because I already was a vegetarian then. Since I've supported the cause for animals, I've met many, very many people who are totally astonished and also glad that there are Christians who work for animals. Most people don't know anything about the love of Jesus for all creatures, because there is little to be found in the traditional church Bibles about how Jesus treated animals. There's the statement that Jesus lived for 40 days in the wilderness with the wild beasts. Also known is that Jesus drove the merchants out of the temple who sold animals to be sacrificed. He set the animals free, and he said, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have made it a den of robbers?"
In contrast, there are ancient sources outside the Bible in which more can be found about the love of Jesus for the animals, and which also express his animal-friendly diet. There is much information about this in a book by the theologian and religion scholar Dr. Karl Scriver, The Way of Life of Jesus and the First Christians. In it, Dr. Scriver quotes the following words of Jesus: "Woe to you who do not hear how it, the tormented animal, laments and cries to the Creator in heaven for pity. Thrice woe to the one against whom it cries and wails in its torment."
And who even knows today that the first followers of Jesus were vegetarians? Dr. Scriver also supplies abundant proof of this. According to an ancient scripture, Peter stated that he lived from bread and olives, to which he sometimes added a vegetable. The church father Clemens of Alexandria wrote about Matthew that he lived on seeds, the fruit of trees, and vegetables without meat, as well as the disciple Matthias, who was voted into the circle of the 12 disciples after the death of Judas. And the apostles Andreas, Philip, and Thomas were vegetarians, as were the evangelists Mark and Luke, as we can deduce from authors of the second century. James, the physical brother of Jesus, and the first leader of the original community in Jerusalem, was also a vegetarian. It is said of him, "He lived on seeds and plants and touched neither meat nor wine." Thus, a few examples from ancient scriptures that demonstrate that many of the first followers of the Nazarene were vegetarians or even vegans. And this animal-friendly way of living had its origin in the teachings of Jesus of Nazareth.
We have before us a book that cannot be found in the Bible, in which a great deal can be read about the love of Jesus for the animals and his meat-free diet. The Gospel of Jesus is an original gospel that developed by way of Christian inspiration and is in accord with several fragments that still exist from the time of early Christianity.
We want to read you a few passages from this extra-biblical gospel. For example, how Jesus set the animals free. And we quote, "And it happened one day that a young man brought him live rabbits and doves that he might consume them with his disciples. And Jesus looked at the young man lovingly and said to him, 'You have a good heart, and God will enlighten you. But do you not know that in the beginning God gave man the fruits of the earth for food, and by this did not make him lower than the apes or the oxen or the horse or the sheep, and that he did not want that he may kill his fellow creatures and consume their flesh and blood? Therefore, let the creatures go free, that they may rejoice in God and bring no guilt to man. And the young man set them free, and Jesus tore apart their cages and their fetters. But see, they were afraid to be taken captive once more and did not want to leave him. But he spoke to them and sent them away, and they obeyed his words and departed full of joy.
On another occasion, it is described how Jesus helped a horse. And it came to pass that the Lord departed from the city and went into the mountains with his disciples. And they came to a mountain with very steep paths. There they met a man with a beast of burden. But the horse had collapsed, for it was overladen. The man struck it till the blood flowed, and Jesus went to him, saying, "You son of cruelty, why do you strike your animal? Do you not see that it is much too weak for its burden, and do you not know that it suffers?" But the man retorted, "What have you to do therewith? I may strike my animal as much as it pleases me, for it belongs to me, and I bought it with a goodly sum of money. Ask those who are with you, for they are from my neighborhood and know thereof." And some of the disciples answered, saying, "Yes, Lord, it is as he said. We were there when he bought the horse." And the Lord rejoined, "Do you not see then how it is bleeding? And do you not hear how it wails and laments?" But they answered, saying, "No, Lord, we do not hear that it wails or laments." And the Lord became sad and said, "Woe to you, because of the dullness of your heart. You do not hear how it laments and cries to its heavenly Creator for pity. But thrice woe to the one against whom it cries and wails in its torment." And he went forward and touched the horse, and the animal stood up, and its wounds were healed. But he said to the man, "Go on your way now, and henceforth strike it no more, if you too hope to find mercy."
Another passage in the Gospel describes how he treated animals like his little brothers and sisters. It reads, "Jesus came into a village and saw there a stray kitten, and it suffered from hunger, and cried out to him. And he picked it up, wrapped it in his robe, and let it rest at his breast. And when he went through the village, he gave the cat to eat and to drink, and it ate and drank, and showed him its thanks. And he gave it to one of his disciples, a widow called Lorenza, and she took care of it. And some of the people said, 'This man takes care of all the animals. Are they his brothers and sisters that he loves them so?' And he said to them, 'Verily, these are your fellow brothers from the great family of God, your brothers and sisters who have the same breath of life from the eternal. And whoever cares for the least of them and gives it food and drink in its need does this to me. And the one who deliberately allows that one of them suffer privation and does not defend it when it is ill-treated allows this evil to happen as if it were done to me. For just as you have done in this life, will it be done to you in the life to come?
Liebe Zuschauer,
dear viewers, dear listeners, I don't know how you feel, but many years ago when I first heard these stories from the life of Jesus, how Jesus treated the animals, what love he had for them, and how he cared for them, it brought tears to my eyes. It was like a liberation. As a child, I had loved the animals, but I could never understand the discrepancy of loving animals on the one hand, and at the same time, of being led to believe that one absolutely has to eat meat, and that that's what animals are for, and so on. Perhaps you've also felt the same. But when I got to know these stories about Jesus and the animals, one very important question was left open. Why didn't I know anything about this? Why do only relatively few people know this at all? For centuries, animals have been tortured and killed. How would it have been if people had known about the love of Jesus for the animals? And with this, we come to the question, why is there nothing to be read about this in the present-day Bibles of the churches?
The four Gospels of the Bible, as they are generally known today, did not fall from heaven as the Word of God. It is known that they were not written by Jesus himself, and probably not by his disciples either, but emerged about half a century after his death. It was only in the middle to the end of the second century that it was decided which of the numerous existing Gospels, it was the most common ones, would be included in the Bible. These are the texts that we know today. There are many others that we don't know. On the other hand, the first church fathers were indeed still able to go back to other sources because some of them very clearly advocated for abstention from meat. One of these was Jerome, who was quite involved in translating the Bible and is revered today as a church father and saint.
And Jerome came to the following conclusion. The eating of flesh was unknown until the deluge. But after the deluge, the poison of flesh meat was offered to our teeth. But once Christ has come in the end of time, and Omega passed into Alpha and turned the end into the beginning, we are no longer allowed, nor do we eat flesh. Apparently, Jerome was not only a vegetarian, but also a real friend of the animals, because according to what has been passed down, he took a thorn out of a lion's paw. The lion then became tame and was a truly loyal companion.
And so, like Jerome, other church fathers spoke out for vegetarianism. One of these was John Chrysostomus, former Archbishop of Constantinople, who, for instance, reported at the end of the 4th century about a group of exemplary Christians, and I quote, "No streams of blood flowed at their place, no flesh was slaughtered and cut to pieces. One does not smell there the awful vapor of meals of meat. One hears no racket and terrible noise. They eat only bread, which they earn through their work, and water that a pure spring offers them. When they want a lavish meal, then indulgence consists of fruits, and they find thereby higher enjoyment than at the royal tables."
Höheren Genuss als an königlichen Tafeln.
A contemporary of Chrysostomus, Gregory of Nazianzus, church father from Cappadocia, and by the way, one of Jerome's teachers, said, "The indulgence in meat dishes is a disgraceful wrong, and I desire that you may strive to offer your soul nourishment that lasts eternally."
And Basil the Great, who is considered one of the most significant figures in the Church, wrote during the same period, "The body that is burdened with meat foods is plagued with illnesses. A moderate style of life makes it healthier and stronger and cuts off the root of evil. The vapors of meat foods darken the light of the spirit. It is hard for one to love virtue when one is gladdened by meat dishes and festive meals.
Those are clear and conclusive statements. Let's imagine if the church leaders of today were to proclaim that from their pulpits, what suffering would have been spared the animals if throughout the centuries the churches had taught the vegetarian diet that was so familiar to some of the first Christians. Where would the earth be today? Maybe there wouldn't be any climate disaster. The earth would be healthy and could nourish all people. And now, inevitably, we ask ourselves, why is this vegetarian way of living of the followers of Jesus practically unknown?
Certainly, several factors contributed to this. The first Christians lived widely scattered in small groups. As time passed, the old cult elements flowed into these young communities. Above all, in those where no eyewitness of Jesus was active, part of these old elements were the hierarchical structures, the rituals, and the concept of sacrifice, which was familiar to the Jews as well as the Romans. And the tradition of eating meat seems to have asserted itself in this way. Presumably back then it was like today. People simply heard what they wanted to hear. Until today, the majority of church members who eat meat refer to a statement by Paul, and I quote, "Eat whatever is sold in the meat market without raising any question on the ground of conscience." But in this statement, Paul wasn't concerned at all about the food, but instead about the fact that it did not matter for whom the meat was offered. Besides, we can't forget that these are not words of Jesus of Nazareth, but merely the opinion of Paul, who did not even know Jesus. But directly before the above statement, Paul himself wrote, "All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up."
Doesn't that mean that for Paul there was no forbiddance? But even for him, eating meat was by far nothing that is helpful or builds up. But theology simply took this half-sentence from Paul from another context and have been misusing it until today as legitimization for the unlimited eating of meat. In doing so, it withholds the fact that in another passage Paul also says that he would abstain from meat if anyone in the community objected to it. Several of the first Christians followed Jesus faithfully, and so like him, they were animal protectors. They were pacifists and conscientious objectors to military service. This is why neither soldiers nor hunters were accepted in the first original Christian communities. But the majority wanted it differently, and the majority finally prevailed. Probably also in the selection of texts that were included in the Bible. Several earnest followers of Jesus were purposefully persecuted and eliminated or silenced. And so the high ethics and morals that Jesus taught became lost more and more over the course of time. An external religion developed with a hierarchical structure, with rituals and cult acts, which had far removed itself from its original ideals.
And Emperor Constantine used this new religion as an instrument by making it the state religion of the Roman Empire. Starting in the year 313, he greatly favored this new church, and in the year 326 issued the so-called heretic law under which he persecuted the early Christian movements. It is said that he had molten lead poured down the throats of those who abstained from alcohol and were a vegetarian, false teachers. Thus, with Constantine, it could have been life-endangering to confess to belonging to the vegetarian minority. This explains why today so little is known about the love of Jesus for animals and a meatless diet. The minority split off, and the minorities turned into the first so-called heretics. The first heretic, whom the Church had executed in 385 in Trier, was the Spanish Priscillian, whose teaching included respect for creation and abstention from eating meat.
The Church began to eliminate more and more the knowledge about Jesus' love for animals and all those who kept to this. Parallel to this, the theological doctrinal system against the animals was established. Augustine, by the way, Pope Ratzinger's favorite theologian, and also Martin Luther's, demonstrated already in the 4th and 5th centuries his cold-hearted and brutal attitude towards animals when he wrote. We can see from their screams that animals die in agony, but this does not affect people, for the animal lacks a rational soul.
Thomas of Aquinas, until today acknowledged the most important doctor of the Church, specified in the 13th century, "We think that man alone possesses a substantial, that is, a living soul, while the souls of animals perish with the body." So much for the quote from Thomas of Aquinas. And such judgments by doctors of the Church, who are highly praised even today, created the foundation for people's cruel treatment of the animals and for the persecution of all those who championed the cause of animals.
And dear viewers, dear listeners, the word persecution should be taken literally here. Priscillian was merely the first vegetarian heretic who was executed. At the Synod of Braga in Portugal in 561, excommunication was declared against those who, like Priscillian, consider meat dishes to be impure and abstain from them. There it says, "If someone believes meat dishes, which God gave people to enjoy, are impure and thus abstains from them, he is excommunicated." A pontifical declaration of excommunication is a kind of death sentence because the person banned was excluded from society. He lost all his rights and everyone was allowed to kill him without punishment.
With his declaration of excommunication, the Pope was primarily targeting the early Christian Manichaeans because they stated, for instance, "Since man must eat in order to live on earth, it is better to eat foods that contain much light, such as fruit, in radiant colors, melons, squash, and cucumbers. On the other hand, strictly to be avoided are meat and wine." The Manichaeans were persecuted and killed, just like all those who dared to put the teachings of Jesus of Nazareth into practice.
In the Middle Ages, the Church Inquisition ultimately had people hung who refused to kill animals. As proof of their correct Roman Catholic belief, suspects had to, for example, publicly slaughter an animal. The philosopher Count von Hunsbrück writes, "Through a bishop's conference in Goslar in the year 1051, several heretics were condemned to death because they had refused to kill chicken, because this corresponded to the ideology of the Cathars not to kill animals." It has been passed down that even during the 13th century, two women in southern France were handed over as heretics and executed because they refused to kill a chicken.
And today? It's true that today the Church accepts worship services for animals or church conventions for
man and animal. But in terms of the disdain for animals, which until today allows the abuse and killing of animals, nothing has changed in the church. And dear fellow people, do you know what's particularly macabre? The so-called Christian holidays, Christmas and Easter of all times, are the largest slaughter feasts. Jesus of Nazareth was born among the animals in the stable of Bethlehem. The animals gave him their feeding manger and their warmth. And today, as thanks for this, animals are massacred at Christmas time.
It is not any different at Easter. Jesus of Nazareth died an agonizing death on the cross because mankind had not accepted him and his revolutionary teachings. He died at about the same time as the innocent lambs which were sacrificed at Passover at that time. And today? Until today, church Christians sacrifice countless animals for the pleasure of their palates. This is a blatant abuse of the name of Jesus the Christ, who loved the animals and spoke up for them.
But who on earth knows this? And this is exactly the problem. The knowledge about the love of Jesus for the animals was kept hidden for centuries. A Catholic has to subject himself to the Pope in the Vatican, which has its own farm and pontifical butcher shop that supply Pope Ratzinger with meat and sausages. Still today, many a church appears to orient itself to the ancient ritual of animal sacrifice. At an artisan celebration at the construction site of the cathedral in Hildesheim, Germany, that is, in the middle of the cathedral, a suckling pig was turned in its own juices, as the bishopric proudly reported. And this was not the only animal that was sacrificed on this evening for the pleasures of the palate. It's not surprising that until today, with ecclesiastical legitimization, butchers have the Easter lamb on their emblem with a flag of resurrection, a symbol of Christ. Again, this is a mockery of Jesus of Nazareth, who loved the animals.
But it's not only the Catholic Church. At Hubertus Masses, pastors and priests of both denominations bless the hunters, the hunt, and the killed animals. It's not enough that the church bless the terrorism, the war against the animals. Pastors and priests who are also hunters are not a rarity.
Even at the dedication of animal experiment centers, pastors are present to bless the event. To serve Mammon, the Lutheran Church in Hanover, Germany, for instance, sold a lot belonging to the church to the pharmaceutical company, which built a research center there in order to carry out animal experiments there. And at the end of 2011, Pope Ratzinger even named the animal experiment ideologist Dr. Wolf Joachim Singer, known for his experiments on monkeys, as consultant to the Pontifical Council on Culture. This may be the pontifical unculture, but it has nothing to do with the high ethics and morals of the fine culture of Jesus of Nazareth. Until today, the disdain for animals is written into the doctrine of the churches. The life-disdaining formulations in the Catholic Catechism, released in 1992, with a then-cardinal and present Pope Ratzinger as co-publisher, speaks volumes. According to it, the animals are under the stewardship of man, and therefore man may use animals for food and clothing. And the Vatican Church teaches that medical and scientific experimentation on animals is a morally acceptable practice if it remains within reasonable limits.
In 1992, during a contribution to a discussion of the Scientific Council of the Commissioners for Environmental Questions of the Council of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Germany on the topic of the responsibility of man for the animal as a fellow creature, the Luther Church demonstrated its hostile attitude toward animals. Only human beings can be referred to regarding the inalienable dignity and the unlimited right to life of each individual, was stated there. The butchers, hunters, and factory farmers receive their blessing from the Lutheran Church. In the above-mentioned contribution, it was also said, and I quote, "When people live from the killing of animal life, then this is indeed a sign, in the language of theology, of the fallen world, but not of itself the individual guilt and burdening of conscience."
In these statements, it becomes clear that until today, the churches are against the animals. They are responsible for the fact that the love of Jesus for the animals was kept hidden. And it's of no use either when church representatives now and then speak nice words in the media, for example. One has to preserve creation. Or have we perhaps not seen the report that the church authorities are urging that factory farming be immediately stopped and eating meat should be gradually stopped? Where was the report that the priests are all now gradually becoming vegetarians? Where was the appeal to industry to immediately abstain from animal experimentation? Where was the appeal to the hunters to lay down their rifles and to let the animals in forest and field live? I have heard nothing about this.
Today we've quoted several historical sources which confirm that Jesus loved the animals and was a vegetarian. But in our time, we are no longer dependent on this academic knowledge. Through a completely different source, we learn today how Jesus really lived and what he had and still has today to say to us. It is the source of the divine wisdom, which comes through Gabriele, the prophetess and emissary of God for our time. The divine world has been giving revelations through her for more than 37 years. During this time, numerous books and pamphlets have also been published from the Divine Wisdom, for example, the two pamphlets, Animals Lament, The Prophet Denounces, and The Murder of Animals is the Death of Humans, both of which have been translated into 14 languages and disseminated by the hundreds of thousands.
The central work in which we learn today about the significance of the life of Jesus in a dimension never before existing is the great Christ revelation, "This is my word." It is a work that goes far beyond the content of the Bible. Based on the Gospel of Jesus, from which we have already read several passages today, Christ revealed details of his life through Gabriele. In this work of revelation, it becomes clear that Christ not only came for us human beings, but also to liberate the animals from their suffering.
We'd like to read two excerpts today which make this clear. "As Jesus of Nazareth, I spoke to many people about the law of life and thus about the animals, which, like human beings, feel pain, grief, and joy. Just as man should not be against, but for his neighbor, so should he also be for the animals and bear responsibility for them, because they serve man. Over and over again, I taught the people that animals, too, are creatures of God, which man should not disregard, but should love."
In another passage of this mighty Christ revelation, it says, "Many animals adopt the vibrations of people and behave like people. If human beings change and live in accordance with the divine law, then animals, too, will again become trusting and will be the friends of humans."
Dear fellow people, Jesus of Nazareth loved the animals, and he taught the people to live the golden rule also toward the animals. "Do not do to another what you do not want to have done to you, also not to animals or plants." This truth was, like so much, kept hidden by the church institutions. It was twisted and often reversed into the opposite. If you would like to learn the truth about the life of Jesus of Nazareth, concerning how he treated the animals as well as what his life and his teachings truly signify, then we would like to recommend the great Christ revelation, This is My Word. We would also like to end this program with a passage from this divine work of revelation. Christ speaks. What man does to the animals, he does to himself. For the life, God, is in all forms of life. God did not give man the right to put himself above the animal. He gave him the commandment to love life, regardless of the form in which it manifests itself. With these thoughts, we take our leave of you, dear viewers, dear listeners. A warm greetings in God, and goodbye.